Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.
Hello and welcome to the Tarlhurst End Podcast Extra in association with the Reading Post for Friday, December the 5th. My name is Dan Wimbush, editor of thetarlhurstend.com, an independent Reading fan site and blog. And I'm delighted to be joined once again by the Reading Post Reading reporter Charles Watts. Charles, how are you?
I'm very good, Dan. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not so bad, thank you. We'll start off by getting this out of the way, and I'll ask in the politest possible way. I think it's best you don't attend any more away games, Charles.
I know, I'm officially banned now, I think. That's it, job done. Birmingham, I think we're looking for another reporter to go to Birmingham in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, you mentioned it in last week's show, the fact that the last away game you missed, we won at Middlesbrough, and lo and behold, Freddie goes to Norwich and pick up another win. So there you go, yeah. You look forward to staying home. You haven't got to make those long away trips anymore. And well done. Thanks for your time.
I know, it's exactly that. It's strange. I think Jonathan has covered for me this season at Middlesbrough, obviously last weekend, Leeds, Scunthorpe and Forest. So one defeat out of five he's seen in his record so far this season. And I haven't seen one away win yet. So yeah, it's not great. The record doesn't look too good.
Oh, well, but in all seriousness aside, it was a fantastic result for Reading to get. Not exactly a dominating, you know, this is the future type of performance, but it was the kind of gritty away win that you kind of need when you haven't won away for 3 months.
Exactly, it was a fantastic win, and they came from behind to do it, which is obviously something that's a sort of criticism that's been thrown against Nigel Atkins' Reading side since he arrived here. I think that's only the third time they've done it. It's a fantastic win, and I say I feared the worst when I saw they went behind. Obviously it was going to be Gary Hooper, a striker that Nigel knew all about, who scored it, and yeah, and like I said, I feared the worst when that one went in. But I think what was really important, the equaliser came very soon after Reading went behind, so they didn't really have enough time to let their heads drop. They scored, I think, within about 4 or 5 minutes, and that must have obviously just gave everyone a real confidence boost. And also playing against a side who are lacking in confidence like Norwich are, and who the fans are turning against the manager, I think it quickly suddenly sort of turned the attention back towards Neil Adams in the home support, and things got a little bit edgy, and Reading took full advantage of that, and fair play, three wonderful points.
Yeah, and as much as we've criticised the team for not being able to come from behind very often, one thing Nigel Atkins' teams do seem to do well is hold on to leads. And they did that well all throughout the second half. I mean, they kept Norwich at arm's length. They had a couple of chances, but there was nothing, you know, it wasn't a barrage of chances on Adam Federici's goal. And in the end, it was, dare I say, it was pretty comfortable.
Yeah, I think so. It was just that Murphy chance at the end, really. It was the only real scare that Reading had to cope with. And like you said, I mean, criticism comes at Nigel Atkins' side for not coming back and winning. But as you rightly pointed out, when they do take the lead, they don't tend to throw it away very often at all. And they were comfortable, and Jake Cooper was fantastic, dominant obviously at one end scoring the goals, but you know, his usual end defending, he did it very well. Him and Hector looked very, very solid. That's a kind of right foot left foot partnership, and they coped well with what Norwich had to throw at them, and in the end it was three well earned and deserved points.
Yeah, now Nigel Atkins has I suppose the enviable task for once of actually trying to decide, do you change a winning team? And obviously that's going to be impacted by who isn't available for tomorrow's game with Bolton. What is the latest on the injury front?
Well, I mean, isn't it? It's not great. Obviously, Anton Ferdinand came off the bench for a minute at Norwich and managed to get an injury. So I think it was 45 minutes he lasted on his debut, and he lasted a minute on his... he got through a minute. He didn't get substituted, but he somehow managed to pick up or re-aggravate the calf injury, and he's now out. How long he's going to be sidelined for, I'm not entirely sure yet. So he's out. Jamie Mackie is still out with a hamstring issue. Pog is out with an injury he managed to pick up while going for a jog. Yeah, he was injured. He'd done his knee in a couple of weeks back in training and missed... who was it before Norwich?
Cardiff.
Cardiff, yeah. He missed the Norwich game. The Cardiff game, I think, with a knee injury, but was due to come back training on the Monday. But on the Saturday, the day after the Cardiff game, he decided to go out for a run himself and managed to injure his calf doing that. And it's been out since. And he's still out. Hope Hat Pan, obviously, shoulder, Jem, knee. So it's pretty much from last weekend's game, the only new absentee is Anton.
Yeah, I did notice on Sky Sports News this week that Jem Carrishan was talking about a Christmas New Year return. Is that something you could see happening? Do you think we could see him in 2014?
Hopefully. I mean, again, he's back on the grass this week doing a bit of training, but I don't like putting these dates with Jem. I mean, I seem to curse Jem whenever I interview him and do a story on his return date. I think the first one he was looking at was Cheltenham, was a date he gave me a while back, and then it was pushed back to definitely by the end of November, and obviously now he said sort of after Christmas, and it's just all these dates that he seems to look at seem to come and go, and he's still no closer to a return, and it's just, you know, hopefully this time he's back on the grass, he can step it up, he can join in with training, and then, yeah, I mean, with no setbacks, end of Christmas, start of January, it's a possibility, but I think we've all just got to cross our fingers with Gemma.
Yeah, well,
because we've had too many false dawns before.
Absolutely. Well, when you get him back, it is like signing a new player. And speaking of which, we talked up. I don't want to say talked up. We mentioned the loan deadline in last week's show. It came and went without any activity. There was a couple of news stories that Reading were in for a West Brom fullback, but doesn't look like anything was particularly close. And after you've spoken to Nick Hammond this week, I'm not surprised. Just give us a quick rundown of what Nick Hammond told you about the status of the club with its finances and prospects of transfers going forward.
Okay, I'll just quickly start with Nigel Atkins laughed me out the door when I told him about Jason Davidson. He just categorically said no, there's absolutely nothing in that. That must have been completely agent driven, he says. And so, yeah, on to Nick Hammond. And I finally got him to speak on FFP. He fronted up to the media this week on it. And he spoke very sort of truthfully and honestly. And he gave us a lot of time, which is fair play to him. And I mean, it's not great news, is it? It's not news that Reading fans really want to hear, given it kind of mirrors the country at the moment. It's just more austerity, isn't it? It's the things have been tight for a long time. And looking further forward, they're going to continue to be tight. Obviously, the club think they've met the FFP guidelines for the 2013-14 season, but they're already looking at this current season when the accounts have to be submitted by November. Last season, they were allowed 8 million losses. This year, it's 6 million, and Reading are teetering on the brink with that one, apparently. And any significant spend in January will push them over the line. And the ties have told the club that they are not going to break FFP. That's something that's just been set in stone, apparently. So Reading have to make sure they meet this 6 million guideline when they do submit their accounts next November. And so obviously it doesn't look like there's going to be much spending that is going to be done in January unless players are sold. And I don't think anyone really wants players sold, because anyone of any value at this club, you don't want to sell. What's the point? I mean, Gareth McCleary, for example, you don't want to be selling him, do you? So he says there is scope for a couple of things. Obviously, Glenn Murray is going to be the main topic of discussion in January. What do they do with him? Do they try and get him on a permanent deal? Are other clubs going to come in and sort of push the price up? If I was a betting man, I've got to say at the moment, I'm not sure Glenn Murray's going to stay in January, just because it sounds like things are going to be too tight if it does happen. And if you're talking about sort of big contracts, which is what's weighing Reading down at the moment with certain players. And are you going to give a big contract to a 31-year-old striker and have to pay a transfer fee? I'm not entirely convinced. So we'll have to wait and see on that one.
Kind of interesting to say how late the whole Murray deal came about. Was it 7 o'clock on deadline day?
Well, he was saying at 7:30, the deal was not close to being done. I mean, there had been talks going on for a fair while, but by 7:30, it was not close to being done. And I understand that things were very, very tight in terms of faxes being sent over at sort of 5 to 11, in terms of some people actually thought they missed the deadline at the club. It was that close to being done. And it was all, was it going to be permanent? Was it going to be a loan? Certain parties wanted it to be permanent. Others didn't want it to be permanent. And it got very tight and very, very fraught, Nick Hammond said. And in the end, they got the deal over the line until January. But obviously, there's a month to go now. I think 5 games left of his loan spell. He's had a good sort of record here since he arrived. I think 5 goals. I mean, he hasn't set the world alight or anything like that. And he's gone a few without, I think, 4 or 5 games now without a goal. I'm not sure. I mean, what do you think? As a fan, would you put your eggs in the Murray basket or not?
Well, he's a proven striker at this level. He can play that lone role up front. I joked to someone at work the other day, though, at the moment, you might as well have a John Smith cutout up front for Reading, the amount of chances they seem to be getting every game. In those circumstances, it just completely depends on the sort of fee. I mean, if you're talking around the 3 million mark that's being banded around for Derby, there's no way.
No.
But if it is something closer to a million, you know, maybe you pull the trigger. But again, I think it's going to come down to does Glenn Murray want to stay? Because listening to Neil Warnock speak to the press yesterday, it certainly seems like he's very open to Murray coming back and playing Premier League football. And obviously, if you have got interest from a team like Derby, who are probably soon to be playing Premier League football, I don't really think you want to scrap out at Reading and as a feed off scraps. It just from a personal point of view, I think there are, when you've got more attractive offers on the table, I think you've got to take them. He's got no real loyalty to Reading. He owes them nothing. He signed a 6-month loan deal. He's cutting a year short to go somewhere else. So I'm with you. If I was a betting man, and if you listen to the podcast, you might get that I am. I wouldn't bet on him being here past January.
No. I think that's completely right what you're saying there. It is basically going to end up in Murray's, with Murray's decision, isn't it? It's, where does he go? Does he have other options? Does he fancy what's going on at Reading? Does he sort of believe that the club can build and get towards the Premier League? Because that's what he spoke about when he arrived here. He was talking about this is a club who's recently been in the Premier League and there is ambition to get back. He's obviously ambitious to get back to the Premier League, so it is ultimately going to rest with his decision. And like you said, I don't know, if Derby are knocking, and Nick Hammond says there is interest in Murray, he didn't say who, obviously we've heard that Derby are linked, but Nick Hammond says there's definitely other interest in him, and it's going to be tough for Reading if they are going against someone like Derby for his services.
Absolutely. Well, what do you think about the prospect of then? Do you think it'll be more loan signings coming in? Did you get the feeling there might be a bit more manoeuvrability on that front? Or is it just everything, wages, transfer fees, everything has just got them so tight?
I think everything is tight. There is scope. I don't think there's definitely nothing going to happen. If Murray doesn't happen, I think, you know, there could be other signings arriving, whether it's loan or permanent, I'm not entirely sure, because like you said, it is very, very tight, unless they some players move on. I mean, the key thing with this is it's the wage bill is crippling Reading, and it's obviously the hangover from the Russian era, and you know, the majority of which, a lot of the money is going towards Pogge and Drenta, and I called them the Zingarevich contracts. I mean, Hammond wasn't too impressed with that. He said, he's not going to call them that, but it is the Zingarevich contracts which are holding Reading back, because you sort of look at those two key big contracts. If you sort of hold them up, when Reading were doing the renegotiations with other players around that time, they were, you know, they obviously got decent deals out of it as well, because they looked at what the top earners were earning. And although they weren't going to say, right, we want you to match that, they were going to say, well, if they're getting that, we want to get this. And they just kind of raise the bar, don't they? And so it's a very top-heavy wage bill at the moment from that era. And a lot of guys got new deals. Obviously, you've got Alex Pierce, Robson Carney, people like that. And they won't be cheap. They're certainly not going to be in the POG or the Drenta category, but they're not going to be coming cheap, and it's affecting Reading. Like Nick Hammond said, there's just a period now where they've got to flush these contracts through. Obviously, a lot of people are out coming up this summer, a lot of players, and there's going to be some tough decisions to be made. I mean, you look at some of those, that's for me giving a hint or anything like that, but you look at players like Stephen Kelly. Is he going to get a new deal, do you think? I can't imagine he will, not if Sean Cummins is still around, who also needs to get a new deal. And I can't, there's going to be significant change, I think, in the summer in the playing personnel. I think we're going to see a lot of players moving on who are out of contract, and some of the youngsters who have been bled this season are going to move up and take their spots. So I think we're going to have another significant period of change on the horizon at Reading.
Yeah, and you can head over to tarlesden.com at the moment. We've got a couple of articles up on those players out of contracts, and there's a poll up there for you to vote as well on who you'd keep.
I'm reading those. They're quite interesting, actually. Well, who you guys think could go and who should stay.
I had a look at the poll results yesterday, and the one that surprised me, but shouldn't have surprised me really, was I think about one person out of, I don't know, about 70 votes at that stage had voted for Danny Guthrie to get a new contract. Mm-hmm. And I thought Guthrie had a bit more sort of popularity amongst the fans, but I think this whole season and his constant injury woes have just completely done him in.
Yeah, I can't see there's any way Danny Guthrie will get a new contract. I'd be very surprised if he did. And that's, again, given no hint at all by Nigel Atkins, who we all know very much rates Danny Guthrie. But I mean, this season must have been hugely frustrating for everyone. At the club, in terms of Danny Guthrie, he just has not been able to play. They haven't been able to figure out this injury, and let's face it, he's not going to be on a cheap wage, is he? I'd be very, very surprised, unless he took a significant wage cut, that will see Danny Guthrie already next season.
Or he has an absolutely stormy 6 months. But when you have the likes of Tishabola and Aaron Cole, do do you really want to be handing another contract to an injury-prone player? But we'll see. But moving on then, Bolton tomorrow. A team that, as we mentioned on the main edition of the podcast, they're in form, unfortunately. They've not got the worst record coming to the Modesty Stadium either, but obviously, aside from one particular game last year. and they're not, again, we say this every week, they're not going to be easy. They're below Reading in the table, but form-wise, I'd say they're certainly in the better run of form of the two sides.
Yeah, I think it's 5 wins out of 8 they've got since Neil Lennon has come in. So a very good record. They haven't won in their last 3 away games, though. So obviously they're very strong at home since Neil Lennon's arrived, but not quite so good away. I think they won their first game under Lennon away at Birmingham, but since then they haven't tasted victory on the road. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a very, very close game. Bolton have got a lot of good players. I was looking at the key battles today where the game could be won and lost. And you look at Gareth McCleary versus Tim Ream. I mean, Tim Ream must have had nightmares about McCleary after what happened last season. It's absolute. And to sort of look from afar and see that McCleary's just returned in time to face him again, he can't be looking forward to the prospect of facing McCleary, even if he's 70% fit. So that, I think that's going to be a key battle. And the big decision, I suppose, is does Jake Cooper play or does Alex Pearce come back? And it's a very powerful striker they're going to be up against in Craig Davies. He's scored 5 goals, I think, this season. And I think that's going to be a real big decision for Nigel Adkins. For me, I'd keep Jake Cooper in the side. I don't think you can take him out after what he did at Norwich. And, you know, I'm totally not convinced by the form Alex Pearce has showed before the red card anyway. So I'd keep him in. But that's going to be a big, big sort of physical battle there. If they can get the better of Craig Davies, then I fancy Reading to get the points, I've got to say, this weekend.
Yeah, again, you mentioned Alex Pearce, and it was interesting. You know, again, we're on a squad selector on the website every week, looking ahead to the game and give people the chance to vote on the team. And I think 7% of people wanted Alex Pearce to play. Shows just how quickly things can change.
He's just a man at the moment, Jake Cooper, after that. And it'd just be very harsh. Nigel Adkins has always talked about this pathway for youngsters through to the first team, and I think you can't do much more than what Jake Cooper did last week. And to take him out of the team, then it would be a bit unfair. I mean, Nigel Adkins doesn't seem to work that way, though, does he? He doesn't mind changing the team. He's done it plenty of times before. So, I mean, he could opt for the more experienced option of Alex Pearce. But I would go with Jake Cooper and Michael Hector. I'd give him another game after what they did last week.
Yeah, do you expect Simon Cox to come back into the team?
Yeah, I do. It tends to be the way with Adkins, doesn't he? Cox looks like when they're away from home, he tends to start on the bench now, doesn't he? And certainly more often than not. But he does come back into the side for the end of the day. See, I was talking about it at the office. Who makes way is you kind of look at Robson Kanu or Jordan Abia for this one. I think he'll keep the same defence. I think we'll see Gunner at left back again and Kelly at right back. So to bring Cox in, you've got to think it'll be either Abita or Robson Kanu that makes way. By the sounds of it, Robson Kanu didn't have the worst game up at Carrow Road. I think he sounded like he was one of the brighter performers for Reading. I've gone on record, I've not been convinced by Robson Kanu at all this season. He still hasn't scored a goal or got an assist, I don't think, yet. And Jordan Abita, again, not having the best season, but he's got plenty of assists, including one last week at Norwich. So in my team that I picked in the paper, I went with Abita and left Robson Kanu on the bench and brought Cox back in.
Yeah, okay then. Score prediction-wise, you said you fancy Reading for a win.
I do fancy Reading for a win. I'm trying to remember what I actually went for in the paper, and I think I went for 2-0.
Okay, that we're going to stick with?
So I'll stick with that. I think I'll go with another clean sheet and 2-0.
Well, it gives you a unique score in the prediction league. I went for a 1-0. Johnny said 2-2 and Westy said 2-1. We're going to lose, obviously. None of us have predicted a defeat, so now that one on the coupon.
Did anyone have 2-1 at Norwich?
Yes, Westy. He completely pulled one out of nowhere, much to his joy. He didn't have money on it, though, so there you go. Shows the strength of his convictions. Quick thing before you go as well. We're running our Player of the Month poll, and I think the official website are doing as well. Who would you give the award to for November? Adam Federici and Ollie Norwood seem to be the two battling it out on the Tyler Sands poll. Would you go for one of those two? Is there someone else that's stuck there?
I'm not sure I'd go for Ollie Norwood. By the sounds of it, Ollie played well at Norwich, but I thought he'd been a bit off form since then. And I don't think I'd go with Ollie. I mean, Feds has been very good. He's barely put a foot wrong, even with the goals that have gone in. I think he's been a bit of a rock for him, I probably would go with Feds, you know. In fact, sort of looking at player of the season so far, I still think Feds is my pick for player of the season. And again, it's quite bizarre considering he conceded so many goals, but I still think he's my pick for player of the season. So I'd probably go with Feds, I think.
Nice. And very final question before we let we go, because we're running long for the podcast. When you spoke to Cameron, did you get any feeling that we'll be hearing from the Thai ownership anytime soon?
No.
Not
at all. I think the next time we'll be hearing from one of the powers that be at Reading, I don't think it'll be from the Thai side. I think it might be someone like Nigel Howe or someone like that, who's directly involved in the running of the club. But from the suggestions I've been getting, I think the Thais are very happy to remain in the background, unfortunately. So I'm not sure we're going to be hearing from any time soon.
Oh, well, thanks. In the meantime, you'll be able to hear plenty from us. You can hear more from Charles and read the very latest Reading news over on the Get Reading website, getreading.co.uk. And you can also read plenty of fan opinion and analysis. You can read some of those articles that we mentioned and lots more going up every day. Head over to thetilelessend.com for that. And you can follow us on Twitter at thetilelessend and Charles at Charles_Watts. But Charles, until next week, fingers crossed for 3 points and that we haven't jinxed them again.
Yeah, indeed. 3 points. Enjoy the weekend.
And you. Take care. Ta-da.
See you later. Bye.
The Tilehurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetilehurstend.com.